car at 98.5. On your phone, on the new Sports Hub app.
And on your computer.
98.5thesportshub.com.
Toucher and Rich.
98.5 The Sports Hub. Want to stay connected to Boston sports?
Who do you root for?
Connect with Boston's home for sports online. 98.5thesportshub.com.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Burt Breer for one more segment, and kind enough to join us. MMQB and NBC Sports Boston. Let's step away from the Patriots for this last break. Who do you think had the best day yesterday in the NFL in terms of free agency?
That's a good question. I haven't really looked at team by team.
Who had the worst?
The worst day?
Who was right there in the middle?
I don't like, so two things shocked me.
Give me the 15th team.
Two things caught me off guard. I think we knew like Andrew Norwell was going to get paid well. I think we knew that Keenum was going to get like around 18. I think we knew that, Kirk Cousins was going to come out of the day with a chance to be the highest paid player in NFL history. The two things that really surprised me, one was how the receivers got paid. Sammy Watkins and Allen Robinson are talented, no doubt, but they're both damaged goods. And Sammy's had the foot issue, and Sammy hasn't lived up to his potential, and Sammy had 39 catches in Sean McVay's offense, which is very receiver-friendly, last year in L.A., and yet he gets $16 million a year in Kansas City. Allen Robinson's coming off an ACL. He gets $14 million a year in Chicago. And if you look back over the last few years, when damaged goods receivers have gone to the market, they've typically had to do one-year deals. Jeremy Maclin had a torn ACL in Philly. He goes back to the Eagles for an extra year on
Jeffrey.
A one-year deal. Alshon Jeffrey's another example of it. That, to me, really stood out as, wow, the market for receivers is there now. Part of that is the draft class isn't very good at that position. But that stuck out to me. And I think it's part of it is you're trying to give your young quarterback guys to play with. In Chicago, it's Mitch Trubisky. In Kansas City, it's Pat Mahomes. And then the other thing was how much Sam Bradford got. I mean, man, $20 million.
Yeah, what's the deal with him? I mean, it's cliched now, but did you watch the opener last year? No.
The Vikings-Saints, that Monday night opener?
Monday night football, please.
Sam Bradford. I'm sorry, it's past your bedtime.
No, it's not past my bedtime. But boring.
He looked great. He looked great. He's capable of if you watch, it's like he's like one of these guys. If you put together a highlight tape, you'd be like, "Sign me up." Can I get that guy? The problem is he's always hurt, and there's just not a lot of history there of him having sustained success. And so, this just is another example. You never live down where you're drafted, and Watkins is another example of it. Fourth overall pick, Sammy Watkins, fourth overall pick coming out of Clemson, was considered one of the best downfield receivers that come out in a decade. And I think lots of people go back to the scouting reports they had on guys coming out of college, and they're like, well, the Chiefs go, we loved him coming out of Clemson. And, these coaches think, well, we can squeeze this out of him. Sam Bradford, same thing. You go back, you look, well, what did we think of him coming out of Oklahoma? Okay, well, what we thought of him, well, here it is in this game, in this game, in this game. And maybe you start to disregard the fact that he can't stay healthy, and so those are the two things that stuck out to me. It was just the receiver market where it was, and then Sam Bradford getting all that money. And, of course, I mean, Kirk Cousins is going to be, that to me is the
right.
most interesting one.
Yeah, okay, so Cousins, you get rid of Keenum, you got Cousins. How many wins do you think Cousins, the difference between Cousins and Keenum?
I think a lot of people were looking at this the wrong way.
Right.
They're just comparing those two players in a vacuum. Keenum was really good last year. Now, I'm not saying he can sustain it. I'm not saying he's going to be that player in Denver. But you shouldn't be comparing Kirk Cousins just against Case Keenum as a player. If you want to know how much better the Vikings are, you have to look at Kirk Cousins versus what Case Keenum was last year, which was pretty damn good. And, I had a coach say to me, yesterday, that talking to him about the quarterbacks and everything else, this guy's a quarterback, coach for a team, and he said, I don't know that he's a great fit in Minnesota. And the point was that Minnesota had to do so much to fix their line last year. They signed Riley Reiff. They signed Mike Remmers. And Keenum wound up being a perfect fit for them because he's great off schedule. And he's great in scramble situations. And so that was exactly what the Vikings needed. And that's where Kirk Cousins struggles.
Like yeah, Kirk Cousins got murdered behind that offensive line last year.
Kirk Cousins is great when everything's right. Kirk Cousins is great when everything's on schedule. When you knock him off schedule a little bit, it's where he struggles. And first 2 years in Washington, what happens? Well, you know, you got Trent Williams, you got Morgan Moses, you got Brandon Scherff. Last year, what happened? They had injuries in the offensive line. And that probably caused more problems for Cousins than losing DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon. And so, you know, I think the situation for Cousins, I think he's a very good quarterback. But going into that situation, I think it's going to be challenging in ways that, you know, it's going to create challenges for him that he hasn't always done well with in the past.
All right, why do you think he's very good?
Because he's accurate, because he's had some guys who've had career years with him. He's a perfect fit for what Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, that's why the Jets were a good fit for him. Like, the Jets were a good fit for him because Jeremy Bates is there, and Bates is basically a coaching cousin of Shanahan and McVay. You hate to call a guy system quarterback, but he's very, very good in that, like, Mike Shanahan system. Like, when Mike Shanahan said, like, I believe Kirk Cousins is a franchise quarterback, Shanahan meant it. He's a franchise quarterback in that specific system because he does what they want guys to do, which is move and process and see the field. Like, that's what he does well. And so if you have things, if you have the table set for him, he's very, very good. If you're asking him to do a bunch of stuff on his own, that's where he struggles because he has a tendency to overthink things. And if you're forcing him to improvise, he's not great in those situations.
Yeah, but do you think the Jets, though, kind of dodged a bullet not getting him because this is not the time for them to get a 30-year-old quarterback?
I think the Jets, look, they put I'm going to tell you an interesting story about the Jets.
Ooh.
I'm going to tell you an interesting story about the Jets. Do you guys remember when David Harris and Eric Decker got cut and the timing of it, right? Like, that was really weird. So there was a story floating around that Woody's whole thing, the owner of the team, Woody's whole thing was he wanted to get the first pick, and they were all in on getting the first pick. And so they go through the draft. They draft Marcus May and Jamal Adams. And so they get out there for OTAs, and part of the story that I heard was Woody got out there at the practices and saw the defense flying around. Holy crap, this team might be capable of winning 5 or 6 games. And we're going to lose out on a chance to get a franchise quarterback. We're going to lose out on getting the first or second pick. I got to do something about this. And so Woody ordered Decker and Harris to be cut. And so they were all in at one point. They were all in.
Because the defense looked good.
They were
That's
all
the
in.
That's the reason.
They were
he
all
his
in.
Big
they were,
floppy
they,
hat on stupid Woody Johnson.
Good call by Woody Johnson, Those guys were such difference makers last year. David Harris in New England and Eric Decker. He knew he wanted to cut good talent. Shipped them out to the UK.
They were all in. They were all in. And remember, Woody was about to lose control of the team because he was. The point is, they were all in. Like organizationally, like there was a directive there. Like, we need to be in position to go and get a quarterback. Now, it fell apart because they were a little too competitive, and now they're drafting a little too low. But they spent huge resources at looking at the college quarterbacks.
Well, they can still get one. What are they, 6?
Yeah.
And look, they can trade.
Okay,
yeah.
So here's another thing about the Jets. They were at every – they had a scout. They had someone at every Oklahoma game, every USC game, every UCLA game, and every Wyoming game this fall. So they've done a lot of work on the quarterbacks. Now,
not
I think part of it, part of them moving and like looking at, okay, we're going to, part of them like making the decision to go to like look at Cousins was because the fit was going to be like really good with Jeremy Bates. Now I think they're prepared to at least pivot and move and go and look at the college quarterbacks. And look, I don't think like bringing back Josh McCown and kicking the tires on Teddy Bridgewater and adding a rookie, like, you could wind up with a better result. Like, you could wind up, like, they may have to trade up. Like, and that's part of the hit they take here is, like, okay, you didn't get Cousins, so that means you're going to be spending draft capital that you'd otherwise be using on other players to go and get a quarterback. Say you have to move up to, say, like Denver, for example. Like, yesterday was a great day for the college quarterbacks, right? Because the team that signed Kirk Cousins is picking 29th.
Right.
Right? So, like, now you've got all those teams
Buffalo,
that are in the top 10, like all those teams that are looking at drafting a quarterback in the top 10, they're all still in the market for one.
Well, except Denver.
No, Denver's still in the market for one.
You think so?
John Elway and Vance Joseph are in Oklahoma right now with
with Keenum, they're still in.
Yes, they're still in. They're going to be at Vance Joseph and John Elway are at Oklahoma today. They're flying from Oklahoma to UCLA tomorrow for Josh Rosen's pro day, and they'll be at UCLA and Wyoming
after whiffing on multiple drafts for quarterbacks.
But this is the new way to find them, though. Like, this is the new way to find them. Like, 2 years ago, the Eagles brought back Sam Bradford at $18 million a year. They turn around, they sign Chase Daniel at $7 million a year, then they trade up twice for Carson Wentz. Last year, the Bears sign Mike Glennon at $15 million a year. They bring in Mark Sanchez as a veteran backup. What do? They actually spend a bunch of capital to trade up from 3 to 2 to get Mitch Trubisky. This is the new way of finding one. Seattle did it with Russell Wilson with lower-end capital, but they kept throwing darts at that board.
So Keenum is a placeholder,
basically. But the idea is, the idea here, like for a lot of these teams is, if we get it right, it doesn't matter. So let's just overinvest. Let's throw a whole bunch of resources at the quarterback position. If, like, say Carson Wentz is who we think he's going to be. Say Carson Wentz has a great 15-year career and is a Hall of Famer. No one's going to remember that they signed Sam Bradford or Chase Daniel. If Mitch Trubisky pans out, no one's going to remember Mike Glennon or Mark Sanchez. And so, you know, if the Broncos wind up, like, say Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield, whoever, winds up being the 15-year answer at quarterback for them. No one's going to care that they spent $18 million on Case Keenum in 2018. It makes some sense because of the importance of that position.
All right.
And you can afford to do it now. You can afford to do it now. You in the old system, you couldn't do it because rookie contracts were, you're paying basically a veteran rate for a rookie.
Right.
Now, with the way the system works, it's actually financially feasible to have a high-end veteran quarterback and a high pick on the roster at the same time.
All right, Bert Breer, there you go.
All right, thanks,
Exhaustive
guys.
Exhaustive coverage.
Nice.
Of everything that happened in free agency and the ramifications to the Patriots. Mike Gorman is going to join us, and we will talk to him about the Celtics.
And Rich.
Are you happy now?
Toucher and Rich.
Ah, sick.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Five, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Mike Gorman is a man about town, and we will get to him in one moment. But Rock and Roll Mike, hello, sir.
Rock and Roll Mike, hot balls.
All right, Rock and Roll Mike. If people don't know, you called in yesterday. All right, can you? You have a new album coming out, and the lead song off of it is the first single.
That's Hot Balls.
All right, can you sing Hot Balls for us very quickly?
Hot Balls! 98.5 Rock! Hot Balls! Yeah!
Well, that's a hit.
The number one, and the second track is The Gasoline in My Bloodstream.
Oh, wow! Okay. Yeah.
Rock and Roll Mike is on the roll! Now, Boston Bruins, I say 98.5. 9 8 5! Pop that pot upon the ice! Rock and roll, baby!
Rock and roll, Mike, speaking Latin at some point. All right, so you say you have a song for the Bruins?
Yeah, that is.
Is that what he
pop
said?
Pop that pot! I'm getting there. Oh, yeah. Pop that pot upon the ice! Rock and
All right, well,
I think that's your new goal song.
All right, yeah. And just real quick before I have to let you go, Rock and Roll Mike, just give me a little bit more of Hot Balls, if you would.
Hot balls, the nice and sweaty. Hot balls. Oh, it's sticky again. I don't know. I'm figuring it out, man.
That's good. All right. You're on to something.
Well, you can call in every day, Rock and Roll Mike, and give us a little bit more of Hot Balls, okay?
I'm gonna give you details. Hey, you guys rock and roll. I appreciate you taking my call. And Rock and Roll America, I'm running for president in 2020.
All right. Thank you, Rock and Roll Mike.
He made that announcement yesterday.
Mike Gorman, I apologize being late, but obviously we had to take the call from Rock and Roll Mike.
Catchy lyric.
Yeah. And by the way, he called in yesterday and there's nothing more to the song. Hot Balls!
He added a verse, didn't he?
Yeah, he actually might have added a little bit of a verse.
Yeah.
Sticky!
A little bit of reverse.
Well, listen, he's a Simon and Garfunkel guy.
I think with the right producer, we might have something.
Yes, indeed. Very influenced by by Bob Dylan. All right, Mike Gorman. First of all, how are you?
Who is not rock and roll, Mike? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a letdown, there's no question. Could you add any lyrics to Hot Balls?
No. I think it's pretty good as is.
No. All right, but okay. But how are you? Are you doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, Fred. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, we got that snow yesterday that was not great, you know?
Yeah, it did kind of slow things up around here, didn't it?
Yes, it did, my friend. But I'm essential employee.
The Celtics weren't playing last night.
That's right. They wouldn't have had the game. But here we are, massive injuries. What is your feeling? Let's start with Kyrie Irving. What are you hearing about him?
Well, it's kind of a reoccurring issue for Kyrie, unfortunately, with his knee, from what I understand, that after he plays two or three games in a row, he has to take a break because of soreness in the knee that just keeps returning. That's my understanding of it. If I'm the Celtics right now, sitting where I am, which is basically you're not going to catch Toronto, and it's unlikely Indiana and Cleveland are going to catch you, I would take the Popovich approach here and start resting people.
All right, so how much do you think that matters, having home court throughout the playoffs?
Well, I think you want to stay in the second spot. You don't want to go below that, but you're not going to catch Toronto. So whether it matters or not, you got to live with things the way they turn out. We got two games left with Toronto, but we're four games behind them in the loss column right now. And the way they're playing and given the injuries Boston has, I would say it's unlikely that position changes. So I think Brad will coach his way through every game. Like, it's like he's got to win every game because that's just kind of who he is. But in terms of who's available to play and who's not available to play, if I were the Celtics, I would start finding injuries for some people and give them some rest.
The other two injuries of note to key players are Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, Mike, and both of them have that indefinite tag on them. Do you know when we might see either of those two guys?
Well, I know in terms of Jaylen, it's going to have to be with the protocol from the NBA in terms of concussions, so he'll have to go through that whole procedure. I don't have any answer for you on the Smart situation. You know, we're not mentioning Daniel Tice, who's gone now for the season. So
right.
The Celtics going into tonight's game, basically, if you consider Tice at worst was the Celtics' eighth man right now, they're missing five of their top eight players. So this is going to be an interesting little stretch. You know, if they go out on the road, usually you think you go to Orlando and you have it easy, but if you don't have any players, you have Orlando and New Orleans this weekend. Again, I think the Celtics have to start thinking about the long term as opposed to the short term now.
Just circling back to Kyrie, you said he gets about two or three games, then it tightens up on him and he needs a break or stiffens on him or it hurts or whatever, right? So he needs a break after that.
Yeah.
So how do they fix that? I mean, will rest fix that? Is that something they're concerned about flaring up in April? Like how do you solve that?
I don't know how you solve it other than give him rest. I can't think of any other way, really. I don't know the details of what is going on there. I do know it's a reoccurring problem. So it's obviously going to have to be dealt with at some level during the offseason. But right now, you're just trying to think about how you're going to position yourself for the playoffs. And I think you want to go into the playoffs with Kyrie as rested as possible.
You get to a point where now you're kind of, because we're down into the stretch run of the season, you're kind of looking and seeing what the playoff opponents would be in a possible second-round matchup. And Celtics had some problems with Indiana, although I think if Kyrie had played the second half, they probably would have won. Indiana's now the 3 seed. Do they worry you in a seven-game series?
They do because of Miles Turner. He's really become a big-time player. Probably not on most people's radar, but he's a very, very good player. He's 22 years old. Played for Texas, I think, for a year before they drafted him. But you put him with Oladipo, who lit up the Celtics for 70-something points in the two games before the last one. Yeah, I think Indiana is definitely for real. I think they're a problem. I don't think you want to draw them really in the playoffs. I don't know who you want to draw, to be honest with you. Philly's young and got some talent. Milwaukee's got the Greek freak. You don't want him to go off on you. Washington is struggling a little bit right now. And it's going to be interesting to see when John Wall returns how well they play. So who the Celtics first-round playoff opponent is pretty much up for grabs amongst four or five different teams. So If I'm Boston, I don't even worry about that right now. I just want to go into the playoffs with people as healthy as possible. So if that means resting people over the next 15 games, I wouldn't hesitate to do it.
I'm curious with Marcus Smart and his injury. You know, one thing that I know a lot of people were clamoring for at the deadline, something that I thought they needed was some help on the wing. You know, not that Smart is a perfect case for that, but he helps them there defensively. Does that feel like an area where maybe they could have gone a little harder, pushed a little harder at the deadline to bring in a little more depth there to protect themselves in case of an injury?
Well, yeah, I mean, hindsight's always 20/20. I kind of wanted a Jamal Crawford type myself. If we're going to get somebody at the deadline, somebody who could shoot it with some consistency. I'm a Marcus guy. I mean, I just think Marcus brings so much to the table. The other night when he hurt his thumb diving for a loose ball on the floor, I mean, he brings an edginess, a toughness to this team that when he's on the court, everybody else follows suit and follows his lead. Again, I'm a big Marcus guy. Could they have got somebody else to back up? Maybe, but I'm not sure what you have to give up for that. I tell you an interesting stat Dick Light gave me the other night. Terry Rozier's first 113 games in the pros, he had 16 games where he scored more than 10 points. In his last 16 games, he's had 16 games where he scored more than 10 points. So he's really busted out quietly here, I think, on the radar of most people. So that's your scorer off the bench now is Rozier.
Do you think Rozier can carry this over in a full season and become a starting point guard in this league?
I think he can become one of the best backup point guards in this league. I think he has the ability to be a starter, but I think Kerry wants to stay here. And as long as Kyrie is here, he's going to play behind Kyrie. But, you know, again, it all comes down to minutes with these guys. And once they get by the fact that maybe they're not in the, quote, starting five, it all comes down to minutes. And if you're Terry Rozier, you're happy with the minutes, number of minutes you're getting right now. You're not really looking to go someplace else to get five more minutes.
All right, Mike Gorman, your opinion carries a lot of weight. When you were on the show last Wednesday, you were talking about how Gordon Hayward...
you're going to bring this up.
Of course I'm going to bring it up. I need that ink, baby. I need some people talking about this damn show.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we did get a rise on that one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. More than even when Ainge talked about it. But your belief was that Gordon Hayward is training and training like he intends to come back this season, and you believed... That is a possibility. The next day we have Ainge on, and he says it's not a possibility. Do you believe that?
Do I believe, Dan, that it's not a possibility?
Yeah.
I believe anything is a possibility. I'm sure they're right now they're gearing themselves to go without Gordon, but I think Gordon Hayward is working out with the idea that he would like to present them with a tough decision to make, maybe before the first round, maybe before the second round of the playoffs. I just, you know, again, I tried to qualify this as much as possible, but as you know, things get clipped out on either side when you have a quote.
Say something outrageous.
I know.
He'll never play again.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, my understanding is the kid is working out with the idea that he wants to get 100% as quickly as he can. And that, I think, if you're in Gordon's shoes, you're looking at playing this year. You're trying to get yourself ready to have the Celtics make a difficult decision. And I think that's what he's doing. I'd like to think that he's making the progress that he's going to be able to be cleared by doctors. Again, I have no one telling me this. I have no one in secret rooms watching him work out. I'm just telling you what I think. And obviously Danny's opinion is more important than mine, but mine's probably easier to talk about.
Yeah, we had Cedric Maxwell on yesterday. He says that he goes out with Grandy just once a season. So yeah. Obviously not a great relationship.
They do go out once a year in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what he was saying.
San Antonio?
Yeah. Like, how is that possible to travel with someone that much and only dine with them once?
Yeah, You got to work at it.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that like something that you would just happen upon? Like that you would just be out? Maybe you would even run into each other at a restaurant? And he made it sound like it was this, you know, great bonding experience between friends, but it seems like they don't enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, all I can say is Scal and I, you know, 90% of the time go out to eat together on the road with our producer, with our director, with our graphics guy. There's usually a group of about 4 or 5 of us that go out every time. We usually always extend invitations to Max and Sean if they want to come along. They don't. They tend to go their own way. And that's the name of that tune.
Do you really want Grandy there with all this wrestling shenanigans and everything else he's into?
Did you get him for the wrestling the other day?
Nah.
Nah.
Oh, okay.
No, there's...
He's encyclopedic on that stuff.
I know, but that probably doesn't make the greatest dinner companion.
Well, if that's the subject you choose.
Okay. I could just picture you sitting there and he regaling you with stories of the NWA or whatever the hell was going on with wrestling back in the day.
Kowalski, right.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Mike, I got to believe that you enjoyed this appearance because you did get to hear the new hit song Hot Balls before it's put on wax. So you'll remember that.
Following Rock and Roll, Mike, is tough to do.
But, yeah. It's like if Chris Rock opens for you and you're doing stand-up. Mm. I mean, you know, it's very difficult.
Well, good luck with Hot Balls.
Okay,
let's isolate that.
I don't think
play that later.
I don't think we need any luck. I think it's just about. I think it's just about the public's thirst for Hot Balls.
I think Rock and Roll Mike could start sampling some. Max talking about it now. Oh, Gorman, yeah. Now Gorman, yeah, talking, maybe yeah. Maybe working a sample.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's got all that equipment.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
just tell him I won't be talking about it after this. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mike Gorman. Thank you so much for the time, sir.
All right, see you guys.
All right, we appreciate it. Maybe he was a little annoyed, but we took Rock and Roll Mike before him.
Yeah, you think?
I don't know.
Is that the sense he got?
I don't know.
Possible.
Mike runs hot and cold.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. He disagreed with Danny there.
Well, listen, Mike Gorman doesn't have to toe the company line, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
He carries a little weight there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Tom versus Time. We didn't have a chance to get into it too much yesterday because Dan was so obsessed. Dan Roach was so obsessed with his death.
Yes, that's true. He predicted that he would die on his trip home and then return to haunt you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and talking about death, and then he said that, you know, if I die on the way home. And I went, oh, that's great, because then everyone will blame me for you dying.
And, well, that was a cheap way for you to get 3 weeks vacation, if I remember correctly.
But I also, and if you think that we're kidding, he texted all of us to say he got home yesterday.
Yep.
Like, he texted us, like, we really thought he was going to die.
It was a group text. Yeah. Made it home, boys! Exclamation point.
Yeah. All right, so we'll play some of this Tom versus Time stuff. It's pretty interesting. This is the headlines.
Toucher and Rich.
Every time Bird comes into the studio, he makes it a point to have this look on his face like he's not enjoying himself. Like he's really intense. He's wrapping up the headphones. It's a very intense mission for him.
He sat down.
Yeah, I thought he was in for the break. I thought this was a, you know, let's talk to Bird segment.
He kind of plopped down.
Was there a reason he had to sit down?
Well, he unplugged the headphones.
He unplugged the headphones.
Well, he had to unplug the headphones, and then he had to wrap the cord around them.
I see.
Here in studio.
Maybe get a little bit of that TV time as we come back
from
break.
Well, I would question the timing of coming into the studio, which was right at the end of the break, and then I would question, realizing maybe the break's still going on, and that he has time to sit down, and maybe he'll get a little camera time.
Okay.
Because that's what sells, you know, that's what sells the bacon.
Right.
A little bit of Bird.
A little Bird time. Right.
All right. So, Tom Brady, I'm sure this has been discussed, but it hasn't been discussed on this show, so we're going to do it, is Tom versus Time. Michael Strahan, by the way, part of this company that makes these things. It's sports is religion, or hey, I'm God, I'm kicking a football, or whatever the hell the name of the company is. But Tom Brady... And it was funny because I miss sort of the subtle jabs at the Patriots because I'm just so fascinated how in 50 to 60% of the scenes, he's getting rubbed down by Guerrero. And I understand that
it's a little distracting.
Yeah, I understand how he's selling this TB12 stuff, and I understand how he wants to open up all these TB12 centers. He wants people to buy the book. I get it. But it's gotten to a point of him getting rubbed down so much that I don't think they're forcing it. Because the first scene in Tom vs. Time is him on a FaceTime talking to his wife and kids. And he's, like, nonchalantly, like, Guerrero's just, like, rubbing his legs.
Achilles. It's weird. The whole thing.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's all Achilles. I mean, he's all over the place there. I mean, a little thigh.
And, like, everybody, I know what you're saying. Like, everybody seems very comfortable with it. Like, it's very natural. It's not like an unnatural, right, robotic, like, oh, hey, this is weird. We'll act our way through it.
He's not, like, at the TB12 Center, you know, with right. He's just sitting there, like.
He's in a room at his house.
Yeah, he's playing Yahtzee and getting rubbed down. Everywhere he is. Yeah,
like, yeah. That's what all NFL quarterbacks do. They throw the dice. They play Yahtzee.
Right. Why not? This is some highlights from Tom vs. Time.
When I hurt my thumb, I thought, this is it.
It's dramatic.
This is the way, you know, the season ends. I'm looking down at my thumb as it's split open, and I'm thinking, I really don't know what happened to my thumb, but I know it doesn't feel good, and I have a real hard time believing I'm going to be able to go out and play well against the number one ranked defense in the league in 4 days.
Should I be worried about the story?
No.
Now, jealousy kicks in. Felger and Maz getting that sweet, sweet airtime.
Were you guys in it?
No.
Night Show wasn't in it.
No.
Sarge was in this thing twice, and we were not in it.
I'm not surprised the Night Show didn't make the cut. I'm a little surprised you guys didn't make the cut.
Well, we just don't talk about Brady. We didn't address the injury.
Chopra's not up this early. No. That may have something to do with it.
No, we didn't address the injury. Right. We were too busy making fart jokes. But it was interesting to see the cut because it was shrouded in mystery, and so there you go. You see it. And it was bad. All right. Now, he is not masturbating. This is him getting a rub down.
Yeah.
Going through a Thursday of, you know.
Okay. Oh, that was actually acupuncture. I apologize. That was him getting acupuncture.
That's how most people sound when they get acupuncture.
Yeah,
very big release.
The endorphins kicking in.
You know, okay, well, it doesn't quite feel right, but it's feeling a lot better. Maybe I got a shot. And then Friday, going out to practice and being like, wow, maybe I can do this.
What an effort! Touchdown, Amendola! Tom Brady does it again! And he's going back to the Super Bowl.
Is Gronk going to be okay for the next game?
He should be. Hey, how you doing, babe? How you doing? Hey.
All right, so he's in the car. I'm still fascinated that he drives his own car. I don't know why. It's just him driving an SUV with Giselle in it is just fascinating. Because my
should he have a driver?
Yeah.
You think?
I think he should have a driver. My understanding is that when Giselle goes to SoulCycle, which my wife has seen her at, been in the class.
Mm-hmm. No big. MBD.
I mean, it's a little big. She's very impressed by how thin she is. Even without makeup, she's radiant.
That's the word?
Radiant.
Radiant.
But my understanding is that there is, like, an assistant, and that there is an assistant driving. And to that, you would say, well, why do people know that? And I would say, you get a bunch of women with a model in the studio, and the attention is going to be turned.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone, you know,
sure,
has this kind of relationship with the Bradys, where their wives have seen them and been in a SoulCycle class with
them. See them radiating in the corner.
David Ortiz, by the way, also at the Chestnut Hill SoulCycle.
Whoa.
You know, I've kicked the bike around a few times.
Yeah?
Yeah. Why not?
One of those candlelit sessions?
You look over to Ortiz and say, race you to the top.
Oh, if I saw him, that would be all the motivation I needed. I mean, come on, Big Poppy, we're going for a ride like you've never experienced before. Let's kick this mother effer up to 10. Yes, David Ortiz. What I like about it is that they it's dark and they play horrible music, and then they come on, guys, do it. Let's go. Now pick up 3-pound weights and lift them while you're riding.
Maybe that could be Rock and Roll Mike. Maybe that could be his calling.
Maybe, yeah, it could be.
Motivate the SoulCycle crowd.
He's like, I know right now y'all got high balls.
Well, maybe you start with cold balls and then he kind of encourages.
Well, the thing is that I need to put a cushion on the seat so I don't sit on my balls. And I'm not lying. How people ride bikes around is fascinating to me.
I couldn't tell you the last time I rode a bike.
Like, I have a bike because my kids still don't know how to ride bikes. They're 9 and 7. Shows what an outdoor family we are.
See, well, you're hogging the bike. When are they going
to
learn?
Well, I had to get a bike, so I got a bike. And I had to get one with, like, a
basket?
Like big. Yeah, well, I mean, I need to pick up my produce. But it has, like, a fat seat on it.
Oh.
Because, like, Rucker has a bike that is the seats are designed in such a way that you sit on your balls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's unavoidable. I don't know how you get used to that.
Seems like they'd improve that.
It's yeah. Why is that necessary? Why can't you put a regular seat on it?
It's a $1 million idea. It's a Shark Tank idea right there.
Well, you know, I'm trying it out.
No ball seat.
They'll go, where's the bike? And I go, all right, I got a Huffy. Now, that's not mine. I didn't come up with that. That's all the Huffy corporate.
Just the seat.
That's Mr. Huffy. He's responsible for that. All right, so they're calling Gronkowski, and now this is a little bittersweet what they talk about.
No, man, you're an animal, dude. Nice job.
No, you're a animal.
Oh.
Just so you know that.
How you feeling, honey?
I'm feeling way better. I just actually laid down for an hour and a half.
That was a miracle of us winning without you out there, just so you know. That was a miracle.
Unbelievable, dude. How does Danny get so good in the playoffs?
That was unreal.
That was the first time that I...
So how is Danny so good in the playoffs? That was unreal.
Now
Danny Amendola.
I'm just going to say it's going to be a while before we see that again, if ever.
Mm. Well, we see Danny Amendola in the playoffs?
Yes.
You're saying that the Dolphins are going to take over the AFC East?
I know it's a hot, sizzling take, but yes. No. That's exactly what I'm saying.
All right, Homer.
Mark tape.
John the Homer.
Then I'll be like you, Jones. I'll have to answer for it later.
That was the first time that I had seen my kids really react in that way. Like, you know, Benny was crying. Vivi was crying. And they were sad for me. And sad for the Patriots. But I just said to him, I said, look, guys, this is a great lesson. You know, we don't always win. We try our best. And sometimes it doesn't go the way we want.
You know, it's been good. I think, you know, just holding the space for everyone to process everything. You know, I feel like holding the space for Tom to process it. He's been much better this time than the other times, you know? Yeah. But I feel that, you know, now their dad's job has finished, and now actually they're really happy because they get more of their dad. You know, they never get their dad.
This offseason is going to be about my family. And they deserve it. There's more to think about than just me. And I think that's what you commit to when you have a family. And they commit a lot to me. You know, that obviously goes both ways.
These last 2 years have been very challenging for him in so many ways. And I think he just wants, you know, he tells me, I love it so much and I just want to go to work and feel appreciated and have fun.
It's a big commitment.
Now, I agree with everyone. I mean, that is a message. Tom has full editorial control of this thing. That was not in there by accident.
No, it's the final minute of a 6-part series.
Yes.
And his wife is going on and on about how he wants to be appreciated and have fun. And the last couple of years have been a challenge.
Yes. I mean, that is in there for a reason. And because you have to think, too, that this documentary is not built on, hey, look at me, I'm a patriot. This documentary is,
right.
I'm an athlete that's been able, due to my rigorous diet and exercise program that I can get you involved with, has been able to play at a high level at an age where people felt that was impossible. And to throw that in at the end makes it about the Patriots. And that is obviously a jab at the organization. I mean, I don't think you can look at it another way. Because that when they went into making this documentary, that was not how they were going to end it. That was not...
No, they were going to end it with, yay, we won a Super Bowl.
Or hey, you know, next year, and I'm going to go out and train, and I can't wait to get back. There wasn't going to be this, you know, message at the end about how challenging it's been. We got a break, but we'll be right back.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, 98.5 Sports Hub.